With our guest, Andrea Message, as we talk about her work, A Ghost in the Coal Cellars. So make sure you're part of the program. Share your questions and stories with us next. And welcome back to Coast. Andrea Message is with us, of course, and we're going to take your phone calls. You call yourself the lone investigator. I assume it's because you go out by yourself?
Well, not necessarily. I have done investigations alone, mostly at places that I am very well familiar with and under certain conditions. But when I call myself the lone investigator, it mostly means that I don't have a paranormal investigative group, because there's a lot of people that have local groups and they do a lot of different local investigations. And what I like to tend to do is travel the country, talk to other investigative groups, learn their theories, learn from them a little bit about how they do an investigation, see what kind of their styles are, what they think paranormal things are, like what they think ghosts are, what they think ghosts are not, and just learn from different people and learn from different experiences. And the reason I like to do that is because it opens up so much more for me. Instead of just sticking to my little area and my little group, I can just go around and see all of these different people who are having paranormal experiences and help them, and at the same time learn from other groups and learn from other people. So I call myself a lone investigator simply because I don't have a group of my own, and I take that opportunity to be able to travel around and talk to other people.
Andrea, do you find that the belief in the paranormal is going on the increase these days?
I don't necessarily think that the belief is increased. I think that because of shows like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures, people are more willing to come forward than they were in the past. I think that there's always been people who have had paranormal experiences, but especially in the religious community, it's such a taboo. And people are actually ostracized, especially I know a few people in certain religions. I will say one of the ones I just always have the hardest time trying to talk to are Baptists, just to be perfectly honest. I've been, I have actually had Baptist ministers tell me to turn away from the occult and go back to God when I've tried to, because I've been interviewing religious clergy from different religions, Jewish, Catholic. I tried the Baptists, but they were just unwilling to talk to me, and they thought that I was some kind of a Satan worshiper, just because I'm a paranormal investigator. But a lot of people were ostracized from the religious community for their beliefs.
Do you think you've ever been attached? Andrea, do you think you've ever been attached by a being out, that it grabs onto you and comes home?
I don't believe that I have ever been, no. I am very careful when I go into a paranormal investigation and when I come out of a paranormal investigation that I cleanse myself. My personal way of doing that is to bless myself with holy water, to say a prayer, and to call upon the protection of Archangel Michael. And then I go through my investigations, and I'm very specific. Nothing is allowed to follow me home. Nothing is allowed to attach to me or to my equipment or anything. I do not open that invitation. And then when I leave, I re-bless myself with holy water. I bless my equipment. And for me, that's my version of protecting. The biggest thing, too, is just to say you are not allowed. I do not give you permission to attach, because that's a lot of things that want to attach to you, the bad things that want to come with you, need that invitation. And so I make sure that invitation is revoked. And so I've never had, knock on wood, I should say, I've never had a case where I've brought something home with me.
Well, that's good, because you know, some people, they have been able to do that, and it's a mess.
Oh, yeah.
What about the Ouija board? Ever play with it?
No, I do not. That's something a lot of people think the Ouija board is, you know, especially if you know how to use it properly. I know paranormal investigators who use it religiously, but I personally do not like to use it. The Ouija board itself is, let's say you can go into a house, not paranormal, there's nothing going on there, not haunted. What you do is you open up a communication with the spirit realm, is what they believe, and you call on spirits, you invite them to not only come down and visit you from this other world, where you open up this door for anything to come through, and you don't know what's coming through. And again, demons will sometimes pretend to be something else to you know, lower your guard. And when you're inviting things to come, you're not saying, oh, I want anything but a demon. You're just inviting spirits in general to come join you. And then you're asking them to use you as a conduit to make the planchette move. So you're actually allowing them to use your physical body. And I just don't believe in inviting something to use me in any sort of way.
All right, let's go to the phones.
My personal preference.
We will go to Chattanooga, Tennessee to get started. CW's there. And you're on the air with us, CW. Go ahead.
Good morning, Andrea and George.
Hi.
Hi. I have a memory of being a ghost in between past lives.
Tell us about
that. And I'd like to remember like 12 lives backwards and 3 forwards. Mm-hmm. So I have a memory of only one time in between those lives being a ghost, and it was because of the way I died in a very traumatic way. And I've tried to do research to determine the era that this happened to me in. And it seems like it was around 1500s. And it was probably somewhere in the southeastern United States. Mm-hmm. And I was a male, Native American. I was a trader. And I was hired by some Europeans, probably Spaniards, to guide them from place to place because they had no idea where anything was. And I had led them to where they wanted to go, and then we were going back. We were returning, and they thought I had something valuable, gold or jewels or something on me. And so they let me get in front of them, and they shot me in the back.
Oh, geez.
And I died, and I watched myself die. It took a long time. And then I watched animals eat my body, which made me furious. And I was all sad because I couldn't return to my people that loved me to tell them what had happened to me, and I knew they would never know. And so I became like an emotional danger zone in the area I stayed in around. I could see my bones. And it's interesting because they don't see colors. They can just see black and white. And they just have kind of a gaze, a gauzy view of what we see crisply. But myself as a ghost, I created as much turmoil and pandemonium as I could, and it seemed like a long time that I did that. And with animals, with people that would pass through, with anybody that I could, it was like a regular person being in a bad mood and wanting to make everybody else be in a bad mood too. Very human.
CW, how did you cease being a ghost?
Okay, that's a great question, George, as usual. A lightning storm came in and caused a forest fire. And my bones were burnt up in the forest fire, and that somehow, interestingly enough, released me. And I could move on and do my next life. But I really think that we are all ghosts in bodies, that we've made a contract to be what we think of as a ghost, but we're in a body. So a fear of ghosts is like being afraid to go to the grocery store. You know, I mean, like, you can go hang out in dangerous places and have bad experiences with people, and you can do this. I believe you can do the same thing with as a ghost or as being exposed to ghosts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, actually, that makes sense. And I've actually heard kind of a similar theory before that we're actually, and a lot of people do believe that. We believe that our bodies are just basically a shell for our spirits. And some believe that the spirit will cross over, depending on what religion you are. In Catholicism, we believe we either go to heaven, hell, or a place called purgatory, where mm-hmm. we die in the grace of God, but we need to cleanse our souls before we're ready to cross over into the pureness of the light of heaven. So a lot of people do believe that our bodies are just merely shells and that we're spirits inside of our shells of our body.
Purgatory used to be called limbo, I think. Was it not?
A lot of things have changed. But I believe that purgatory is kind of it's kind of similar to limbo, where
the
I know that one person says that limbo actually is a little different than purgatory because it's where people who are unbaptized go. And then purgatory is where people who are baptized and have died in the grace of God go to cleanse themselves of venial sins. So I guess it kind of depends on who you're speaking to. I know that a lot of priests nowadays kind of lump the two together. But I've heard two where the two separate places for two different things.
All right, let's go to Todd in Gutenberg, Iowa now. Todd, thanks for calling. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, George. Great show you have here.
Thank you, Todd.
Hi.
I got a little story about when I was two, we moved into a house in Epworth, Iowa. And the tenant before us, the lady, she had mental issues, and she ended up taking her own life along with three of her five children. And when I was growing up there, I used to have this recurring dream all the time that my family was out to get me, and I could never keep, I always had these little black dogs, and I could never keep them alive. They wouldn't last very long. And just recently, within the past 6 months, my cousin moved back from Florida, and we got to talking about that house. And here she was good friends with one of the deceased girls. And her dad was called, he was a cop at the time, and he was called to that house that night of the tragedy. And he had to shoot a little black dog to get in the house.
Huh.
And, yeah, it was just a little bit too
It's bizarre. Strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
And recently, my sister and I opened up a restaurant. She lives in southern Iowa. Her and my cousin went to the Velisca house. And when they returned, you just wouldn't believe the things that happened around that restaurant. And she says that she did a little investigating, and the woman that died in that house, I believe the mother, was from the town that she lives in currently in Illinois, and she was watched children for a living, and that's what my sister does.
Oh,
small. She could be the reincarnated version. You never know. What has been for you, Andrea, the strangest case you've ever encountered?
I personally, I think they're all kind of strange when you really think about it. When you're trying to communicate with someone that's not really there, or like they can't really see it, that's strange to me still. But I do have to say, to this day, I think the strangest encounter that I've had was in the coal cellar at the First Word Schoolhouse. When I did, and I have to clear something up. People are probably like, they're kind of shocked and a little bit laughing about, I am looking at Facebook posts on Coast to Coast on Facebook. And someone said, how can you be borderline demonic? Because I said, whatever was in the coal cellar is borderline demonic. And what I mean by that is a theory that's being played around with is that sometimes if you're a real jerk in life, and you're stuck in this world after death, you're right. going to be a jerk in death too. You're not going to suddenly be this wonderful person. And sometimes some people are just so evil that the only thing you can call them is demonic, but they're not actually demonic. And so I call it borderline demonic, where they're just evil, evil entities, but they're not actual demons.
Right. See, I don't think demons have never had souls, I don't think.
Yeah. Demons are what they call inhuman spirits. They're things that walk the earth. Or that never walked the earth as mortal. Just like angels. Angels would be called inhuman spirits because they were never human. They were created separately from humans. So when I say borderline demonic, I'm talking about what we believe could be an intelligent haunting, which is an actual person, a physical soul that used to be a human being, but is just so evil that the only thing you can call them is demonic, but they're not demons because they're not inhuman. So that's what I meant by borderline demonic. I'm really sorry if there was any confusion about that. One thing I do want to also say is I know some people are saying they wish they could hear some EVPs. If you do go to paranormalromine.blogspot.com, which is linked on the Coast to Coast site, I do have some EVPs that are posted on various different blogs, and I do plan on posting more.
Good.
So they are there. I just don't have them with me because I was invited kind of last minute, so I couldn't send any at the time.
Have you found that the EVP sounds, Andrea, are so difficult to listen to? They're just, you know, they don't come across as really clear.
There have been a lot of them that don't come across as clear, and I usually kind of throw those aside. Like, if I can't really, if it's a class three, what we call class three, which means it's just not audible, it sounds weird because it doesn't fit into the situation that's going on. Like, if I'm talking about spaghetti, and then there's something talking about, like, the baby in the corner, which is just out of the blue, it'll still, I'm like, well, if I can't understand it, it's still, even though it's odd, I'm going to kind of put it aside. But there have been some electroplace phenomena, and in fact, I'm going to be posting some pretty soon from an investigation I just did that are so clear and just so unnerving. One happens to be of, I'm explaining my name, and I said, everybody just calls me Drea, because nobody knows, they don't know if it's Andrea or Andrea. And so I said, oh, they just call me Drea, don't worry about it, just call me Drea. And not very long later, there is a disembodied voice of someone actually saying my name, Drea. And that happened multiple times. And there was a time when one of the investigators was saying a prayer, like I do, he's Catholic, and he actually kind of says prayers once in a while to protect himself.
Sure.
And there's something that's very evilly, I mean, it's a very frightening sound of a laughter, almost like it's mocking him for saying this prayer, like invoking the name of God, and it's just mocking him. It was a mocking laughter, and that was clear as a bell. So there are class one. I do have many class one EVPs. I'm going to be posting the newest ones pretty soon, but a lot of them do tend to be unclear, and if I'm going to a client, I usually don't bring those. I'll say I have these, but I just don't feel that they're evidence, because I can maybe explain it away as wind or someone outside that just happened to be caught on a microphone. And so those I don't use. But yeah, it can be. You can have some that are so clear and so unnerving, and then you can have some you just don't understand.
Let's go to David in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. David, take it away. Welcome to the show. Hi, Dave.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, David. Thank you.
Andrea, I just want to ask a question. I have a real interest in this the ghost versus demon thing. My dad died when he was 49, and I tried to contact him, you know, such an early life. It seems like you don't have a chance to really talk to your father that much. And so I always thought, through mediums, et cetera, it all seemed like gibberish. I mean, there was never anything definitive. And I came to the conclusion that this was all a mockery of some sort. And in reading the Bible and everything, it seems to me that the demonic have a goal to give us the illusion that we don't die, that there's actually this guaranteed afterlife that you go. It might be a hell. It might be whatever it is. You go here, you go there. But the idea that you don't actually die, where the Bible says the dead know nothing, and you do die, and your only hope is in the resurrection, in the salvation, you know, of God. So don't the demonic have a stake in convincing us that we don't die? Wasn't that the original lie in the Garden of Eden, thou shalt not surely die?
Yes, that actually, and demons do have a stake, because the whole goal of a demon, and again, I'm going to kind of go back to the story of Annabelle. The whole point of that demonic, when they were trying to get the invitation for you to invite them in, and the whole point was to either possess the soul. They say within a few months' time, the nursing students would either have been completely possessed or dead.
And it's not much of a choice. Stay with us. We'll be back. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, among the guests, John Casey joins us talking about cold sun and his thoughts on a very dangerous global cooling over the next 30 years. So make sure you're part of the show. We're going to come back in a moment with Andrea Message, and we'll take final phone calls with her as well on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Andrea. We were talking about demons and whether they're soulless or not. And go ahead.
I wanted to finish that call. I'm sorry I didn't get to finish it. But
yeah.
my main thing that I've, in my research and my personal religious beliefs as well, I can't speak for everyone, obviously, but my main thing about demons is their whole entire purpose is to lead people away from God, because they're basically the opposite of good. They're evil, and they don't want you to follow the righteous path. And as for they want us to believe that we're going to live forever and that we're going to go on, and to me, I mean, that's actually not demonic. That's true. The Bible, if you're looking specifically biblically, the Bible states that if we have a belief in Christ, we will go to heaven. And in Matthew, Mark, and in the book of Revelations, it talks about hell as being an actual place, a furnace of fire, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth, where a person will be tormented with fire and brimstone, and that hell was originally made for Satan and his demons, but that it's also a place of retribution for people who do not follow the path of Christ. So there is actually, if you look in the Bible, when you look at like Matthew 13:50, if you look at Mark 9:48, Revelation 14:10, 14:11, 2014 and 2015, it talks about hell being a very specific place. And in my personal religious belief, the main purpose of a demon is to try and get you to get off the righteous path so that he can one day claim your soul, and your soul will end up in a place of fire and brimstone for eternity.
They want those souls, don't they?
They want those souls, and they want you to harm yourself. They want you to harm other people. They want you to deny Christ. They want you, basically, they want you, everything that's bad is what they want you to do, and sometimes they'll trick you to get what they want, as they did in the case of Annabelle, by pretending to be a little girl and making those women lower their defenses and invite that demon into their lives.
Let's go to Three Rivers, Michigan. Jim's with us on Coast to Coast. Jim, thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Hi, Andrea. Hi, George.
Hi.
I was a real skeptic, and I had a little story. 20 years ago, I was a supervisor at a factory, and I did special projects at night. And one particular night, I had my brother with me, and we left about midnight, 1 o'clock, and as we were leaving, we pulled up to an intersection, and the traffic light went out, street light, and my little brother said, by golly, when I pass away, they'll know that I'm looking over your shoulder when you see a street light go out, and I kind of chuckled. And he was 34 at that time. And less than 1 year later, he passed away with a massive heart attack. And so stop to think how many times you've been under a streetlight just at the time it goes out. Doesn't happen very often.
No.
And since that time, I've had literally hundreds of experiences with just as you pass under a street light, the light will go out, or just before you get to this light, it'll go out. And it just, every time it does, it just sends chills down my spine. So, I know there's something, you know. So,
he's out there. A lot of people have this energy. This ability to knock out streetlights, but that's somewhat supernatural. Go ahead, Andrea.
Yeah. Yeah, and I, you know what? And a lot of people have said that they've had family members that have certain perfumes, and they'll smell that perfume, or they'll have, like, you know, they say, if you hear something clapping, just know that's me, you know, clapping for you and rooting you along the way. And after that person passes away, they hear, you know, clapping every so often when they have a major accomplishment. There's clapping from out of nowhere that startles everybody, and it's a reminder. And I firmly believe that if a soul goes to heaven, and I pray for, you know, as a Catholic who believes in purgatory, I pray for souls in purgatory all the time, because I feel that that helps them be able to move on to heaven. And I believe once the soul's in heaven, that those family members that we loved do still watch over us. I firmly believe to this day that my dad still looks over my shoulder and sometimes shakes his head and does the face palm thing at, like, oh, I can't believe you're, oh gosh, you're embarrassing me. Oh geez, Drea, why are you doing this? You know, so, but I believe he's still watching over me. I firmly believe that in heaven, our loved ones will still watch over us.
What drives you? You have an incredible passion. You keep pushing. How come?
Because I would say boredom, for one. When you live in the UP, isn't much else to do to occupy your time. But I also think that the thing that really drives me is my dad, and that message that I got from my dad, and that I love you, a month after he died. I mean, that was such a poignant moment for me. Of everything that happened when I first had an experience in the paranormal, when it, even more than just the footprints that my mom and I both experienced together, even more than the box coming flying out of the closet, just that hearing my dad's voice again, a month after he had passed away, giving that final message of, you know, just letting us know, I love you. And to just to remind us before he was officially finally, I think, crossed over to the next world. It was something that was so deep to me that I wanted to help other people who are in situations that were similar to mine that are looking for answers, whether it's they're having experiences with a family member that's deceased, still trying to communicate to them, or whether they maybe move into a house and there's paranormal activity and they don't understand what's going on. And I want to help somebody. I didn't have anybody to explain this to me. As a skeptic, my brother tried to explain it to me. I didn't understand it, but I didn't have a paranormal investigative group. I didn't know that there were groups out there to help people. And so I said, I want to become one of those people that are going to help people in my situation where they're just starting to have their very first experiences and they're scared and they don't know what's happening to them. And I want to try to help them realize what's going on, where they can find help if they want to get rid of any kind of spirit that's in their home and they want to get rid of it. I help them with that. I help them understand what they're going through and let them know they're not alone and that they're not crazy, they're not losing their minds, that other people are experiencing this as well. And that's what drives me, is to help other people having that first initial experience like I had and to make it less traumatic.
Let's go out to Hawaii. James with us now. Hey, James, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, George? And how you doing? It's very nice to hear your story tonight. It's my first time to ever get through to you from Hawaii.
Oh, great.
So, anyway, I have a little short thing to say here. I've had a lifetime of super paranormal activity. In fact, it's just, if she's interested at all, I could tell you millions of places to go. I've had so many things happen. It's crazy. My fans here in Hawaii, like when I left Texas 13 years ago, I came to Hawaii. I started two businesses. Now I'm attending the university. I can't say the name. I really don't want to say it, but I'm going to college. And since I've been here alone, I've seen my fans turn completely off and on. I thought I left it alone. I thought it left me when I left Texas. And it's followed me or something, or it's just, sometimes I wonder if it, you know, like if it's a demon or is it just me, you know, maybe like, I think it's demons. Maybe I think it's spirits, but in the back of my mind, like I've had so many things happen. Like I said, I've reached for the door in the bathroom at my grandma's house in Texas when I was a child, and the door lock unturned by itself and the door flew to my hand. And I was on my way to answer the phone coming out of the shower. And then that happened to me again when I was actually in the back of a cop car in Harris County Sheriff's Department. We were underground. It's on film. They had it. They thought I had ticks. All the door locking mechanisms had been removed. When I reached for the door unlocked. When I opened the door, and the officer went from super nice to super angry. Because he thought I had picked the door somehow. And they searched me. They searched the car. They couldn't find no picks. But it was all on film. They have it documented. It's logged on their...
See, I don't know if that's a demon as it is more of a mischievous ghost. Andrea,
yeah.
I don't think demons like to just play around. They're serious and want to hurt you, don't they?
I'm not going to say that it's demonic. Don't start panicking, because that's not the first. That wouldn't be my first assumption when I am hearing your story. And paranormal attachments are very common, not just to objects, but there are some in certain instances. A spirit might be attached to you, whether because it just understands that you're more open to communication, that maybe it knows that you, like, because a lot of people just kind of ignore and pass spirits by and just say there's a logical explanation. But if there's somebody who's more open to it, they kind of latch onto that person like, hey, I'm trying to communicate with you. But when it comes to demons, they don't, I mean, they want to hurt you. Their whole entire goal is to turn you off the right path, and sometimes to hurt you, sometimes to make you hurt other people, and to turn you away from God, basically, for those that believe in God. I know there's a lot of people who believe in the paranormal that aren't spiritual. But demons will always start to in a way that makes you trust them, like, oh, I'm great granny, or oh, I'm a friend, I'm a little child, come play with me, or I'm just being funny, I'm just having fun. And then they kind of start to within, and it's not very long, it's not over a period of years and years and years, it's relatively quick, that they will start to kind of take the turn and eventually start to take over your life and either fully possess you or harm you in some way that causes you serious injury and or death. But so to me, it sounds more like a spiritual attachment, and like maybe something that's following you around through the years, not necessarily demonic. If this is something that is bothering you or that's worrying you, I don't know where you are religiously. A lot of people will go to a spirit, like a medium, psychic mediums, to have themselves cleansed. A lot of people will go to elders in their community for like Native Americans that have special cleansing rituals. A lot of people go for blessings from priests and have themselves cleansed. And sometimes it just takes a, hey, I don't want you hanging around me anymore. Could you please either move on or cross over? And a lot of times if they're benevolent spirits, they do tend to just take your word and leave. I actually had that happen in one case in a book where they just said, can you please go? And the spirit actually did leave just by their request.
Right. But if it doesn't leave, what does that tell you?
If it doesn't leave, it could be lending to either, like I said, where I go back to the where it could be a human spirit that's just a real jerk, and a jerk in life, jerk in death, and like I say, borderline demonic, where it just wants to mess with you. Or it could potentially be demonic in that aspect as well. But like I said, based on what you're telling me, it doesn't sound demonic. But yeah, if it's something that you definitely want to get rid of, or something that's been following you and that's been bothering you and that's been causing you a lot of stress, I would go whether it's to a clergyman based on your religion, or if you're not religious, to like maybe if you believe in like Native American shamanism, or if you believe in psychic mediums, I would go and see if there's some way that you can cleanse the spirit away, or just ask the spirit to go, or ask the spirit to calm down and stop doing things that annoy you. But yeah, spiritual attachments of human intelligent hauntings is possible, but demonic attachments are also possible. It's something that you would have to have investigated before anybody could tell you one way or the other. I don't want to say demon without actually investigating the situation. So if you want to invite me to Hawaii right now, I would definitely
off you
get on
go.
A plane and go and get out of this below zero weather. But I can't really tell you if it's demonic or if it's a human intelligent haunting without actually investigating. Hawaii does have some really great paranormal investigators. I would recommend looking up one that's nearest to your area and maybe inviting them to do an investigation. And if it's attached to you, actually participate in the investigation if you feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, and before we go to final calls, The Ghost in the Coal Cellar, where do you get the book, Andrea?
You can get it on Amazon.com. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, basically any bookstore. You could get it from Llewellyn, which is my publisher. You can get it from BarnesandNoble.com. Just make sure you get it and support local authors, because how book sales goes will determine if I can bring you some more really awesome stories of my investigations.
So true. Let's go to Running Wolf in New Haven, Missouri. Go ahead, Running Wolf. Thanks for calling.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Oh, yeah, thanks for taking my call. And I was calling about what happened to me and my mom one day. I was up in my bedroom, and we moved into this house, and I could see spirits. Hello?
Yeah.
And I was up in my bedroom. My mom came up there, and she was yelling at me. And she was standing in the middle of my room, and everything flew and hit her. I mean, it didn't fall off the table. It actually flew to the middle of my room, and it hit her. And she screamed for my dad, and my dad came up the steps, and my room was just a mess.
What do you think it was, Running Wolf?
I don't know. I think I was seeing, when we first moved into the house, I was seeing a black shadow. So I think that's what it was. And I still see the black shadow every time something bad's about to happen.
Interesting. Now, these entities, Andrea, that attach themselves to houses and they don't leave, kind of reminds me of that first series of the American Horror television show where these people died in these homes and they never left. Do you have to have died in that house in order to attach yourself as a spirit?
No, not necessarily. I actually had a conversation with Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters at one time.
Sure, good
this
people.
This is something that I had a problem with, because, like I said, I lived in that house. That was my, well, I won't say birth home because I wasn't born in it, but that's where my mom and my dad took me home after I was born. And I lived there, you know, until after my dad had passed away, and we moved up to the Great Northern Peninsula. There was never any paranormal activity going on in that house for 28 years. I never had any experiences. There was never any kind of even a question of potential experiences. And then all of a sudden something started to happen, and whatever was in there just wouldn't leave until after my father had passed away. And so what they told me, Jason told me, that spirits, especially if you're talking about intelligent hauntings of what we believe were once humans that did walk the earth, and now they're spirits that are, for whatever reason, attached here. Some call this their purgatory, others call this where they just can't cross over for whatever reason, that they were just like us. And just like we go on vacation and we travel from place to place, there's nothing that says a spirit is physically tied to an area that they can't travel from place to place. And it's very possible that a spirit just might have even been traveling, found their way to my home, saw that my dad was terminally ill, and decided this is where I got to stay for now.
Well, and there's probably many, many, many like that, Andrea. Thanks for being on the program. The name of the book, The Ghost in the Coal Cellar. For Dan Galante, Tricia Pepe, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.